a council MSRA council member, and I was part of this committee as well, together with Susan and the others. Thank you.
Thank you, Althea. Do we have Jane? Since she's not in, when she comes in, she'll introduce herself. Do we have Jasper? He's also not there, but I guess he'll come in and introduce himself. And Sylvia, on behalf of the Secretariat.
Okay, my name is Sylvia Radigo. I'm the MSRA Secretariat, and I thank you all for availing yourselves for this meeting today. So, karibuni.
Asante, Sylvia. My name is Susan Chege, representing PAS Research, but part of the Council and MSRA Board. We welcome you so much to this webinar, and we hope you will learn a lot from it. We hope you will take something home with you today. Today we have special speakers for this webinar. I will want them to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about themselves, starting with the doctor, the good doctor.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Hello, good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon,
doctor.
My name is Daniel K. Mburu, or Kagiri Mburu. I on site First Eye Hospital, in charge of the COVID infection prevention and control. And I've been in the health sector for about 29 years this year. I'm a young man, and I hope I have something to share with you this afternoon. Thank you.
Indeed, you're a young man, Dr. Mburu. Let us hear from Martin.
Good afternoon, team. I'm Martin Wamalwa from Resolution Insurance Medical Advisory. I'm representing the medical departments of the insurance, but most importantly, I know we address the medical aspect of the business. And we work closely with Faith and Helen.
Are they here? They can introduce themselves.
Good afternoon, team.
Good afternoon.
My name is Faith Ludenio. I'm the relationship manager for Dahlberg Research at Resolution Insurance. Yes, I work hand in hand with Martin Wamalwa and Helen Gary. Helen is not available this afternoon because she's held in another meeting. She sent her apologies. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So I think let us use the chat to introduce ourselves. I don't think we will have time to have everybody introducing themselves. So let's make use of the chat. I think I've just focused on the COVID-19 committee and the speakers for today. I will want now to invite our very able chair for MSRA to give us some introductory remarks. Paul, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Susan, for giving me this opportunity to say a word or two. Indeed, it's a great afternoon. I think for us as MSRA, it has been, not an easy journey for anyone since the last 6 months when we got ourselves in this situation. And I'm glad that we could come together to share a moment like this and encourage one another to move ahead and go through this journey and come out strong. I believe as we congregate and speak together and share our experiences, we will uplift one another, and we'll be able to encourage one another to move forward, and we'll be able to help our industry as well remain strong through this period. We know it was not easy. We had a rather difficult beginning, but I think things are beginning to look up now, and we are heading towards recovery. I would most sincerely thank the people who managed to make time to come and speak with us this afternoon. We really value you taking time out of your busy schedule to come and join us and speak to us and guide us. And I'd also like to thank the the MSRA COVID-19 committee, which has done tremendous work in the past few weeks, I think, since you started the work. Indeed, you know, this is a culmination of you know, several meetings which you have had and several discussions you have held. You have reached out to people, experts in the industry who can come and help us. Thank you. Thank you so much for that great work as a committee of Susan, Jasper, Althea, Jen, and of course, Sylvia, our secretariat. Again, I'd like to thank you for the guidelines which you have developed in that short period to guide our industry, which now are published on our websites. And I'd like to encourage our members and participants in the research industry to visit the websites and check out the guidelines. And also visit the websites regularly to see any updates, because we'll be updating whenever new developments come up. So actually, you know, this is not my time, this time for experts to guide us. So I'll not say much more than this for now. I just want to wish all of us a happy afternoon as we go through this session together. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, for those words. I forgot to ask Collins to just introduce himself. Collins will be our third speaker. Collins, you can unmute yourself and just introduce yourself. And maybe we can see you on video, if you don't mind.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Collins Athe. I work for Dalberg Research in the field department. I'll be sharing with you a personal experience with COVID. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Collins. And so this brings us to the beginning of our session. I will want to invite Dr. Mburu to start us off with the first session, where he'll be covering COVID-19, the facts, how we can handle our mental health, how we can take ourselves at home in case of any positivities. Welcome, Dr. E. Please use the chat box if you have any questions, and then we'll put them together and handle them during the Q&A. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon once again, everyone. All protocols observed. It's my pleasure to share with you what I have for you this afternoon. Ladies and gentlemen, COVID-19 pandemic started as a severe acute respiratory infection that was causing a typical pneumonia, and it became at first an epidemic localized to Wuhan in China, that later on, around December, January 2019, 2020, crossing over to 2020, started spreading to other countries like wildfire. And by February, March, already WHO had declared it a pandemic because it was infecting populations in many countries of the world and was continuing to spread. And our first case in Kenya was recorded on the 12th of March this year. And since then, it has been a journey. Before I go there, I want to say that I will endeavor to cover the definition, the signs and symptoms, a little bit about the modes of transmission, prevention, diagnosis, treatment of infected persons, and the possibility of vaccination, some bit about home care, mental health issues arising from COVID-19, the issue of stigma, and then we could have a little bit of question answer session. Like I said, that COVID-19 and COVID stands for coronavirus disease. 19 connotates the year that it was discovered or found out in Wuhan, and it belongs to a group of viruses designated novel coronavirus that cause severe acute respiratory syndrome, like we have heard before, the SARS and the MERS, M-A-R-S. And therefore, when it comes to signs and symptoms of COVID-19 infection, these are more or less what we see in other viral infections of influenza or flu. This includes fever and chills, dry cough, runny nose, sore throat or irritating throat. There could be headache, chest pain, tiredness, muscle pains, and then a little later in progression of the disease, there could be difficulty in breathing or shortness of breath to actually breathlessness. And lately, or a little later, we discovered also that COVID-19 could present with eye symptoms and signs like red eyes, which could connotate an inflammation of the conjunctiva or the front of the eye. These symptoms were seen to develop between 2 to 14 days of coming into contact or getting infected with COVID-19 virus. And some people have been shown to go through infection with COVID-19 without developing any significant signs or symptoms. And that makes it a little difficult in terms of isolating and diagnosing COVID-19 infected people. In terms of transmission, there are several modes of transmission. The first one is what we call droplet infection, which is common for common cold. That is, as we speak, as we sneeze, as we cough, we could throw out droplets of our own infected saliva into the air. And if people are close to us, maybe a little closer than 1.5 meters or less, within that proximity, there is a possibility that they could get the infection through the droplets. It is also thought that in some instances, for instance, in environments where we can have procedures that generate aerosol, like some certain ear, nose, and throat procedures, some certain surgeries, some dental procedures that could generate some foam-like or aerosol-like droplets and, you know, disperse them into the air, there can be a possibility of airborne transmission, but this is not very common. The other very common mode of transmission is contaminated surfaces. When we get into contact, whether it is with the surfaces like keyboards, like telephones, like door handles, like layerings, like furniture, like cutlery, including cups and spoons and plates and all that, when we handle infected material and infected surfaces with our hands, there is a possibility we could transfer the germ using our hands to the mouth, which has a very porous mucous membrane, or to the nostrils. And some of us, including myself, are fond of picking their nostrils. And also we could transfer the infection from an infected surface or gadget to our eyes, to our nostrils, or to our mouth. And this perhaps could be the, by far, the most effective mode of transmission. In terms of diagnosis, COVID-19 may be diagnosed through two routes. One is through what we would call isolating the virus in infected material. And therefore, we remove swabs from the throat and the nostrils, either or both, preferably both, which increases the possibility of getting the virus. And then we subject these to tests that are able to pick out what we call PCR test or polymerase chain reaction tests for the virus, which are able actually to confirm the presence of the virus. The other method, of course, is antibody testing. Antibody testing is not specific for infection. Why? Because it will not tell us that the infection is ongoing. It only tells us that somebody has had prior contact with the virus and therefore developed a reaction or an antibody reaction to the virus. Therefore, this is not good for testing and treatment of the virus. Let's move on a little bit. In terms of treatment, COVID-19, like most other viral infections, but not all, has no specific treatment as yet. What basically we are doing in hospitals all over the world is trial medication with drugs that have shown some varied effect on the virus, A. B, we are giving supportive treatment in terms of, for instance, if somebody is unable to breathe on their own, we have ventilators and other life support machines and equipment, especially in the ICUs and high dependency units. And if people require, for instance, treatment for fever, then we are able to give something to lower their temperature. If people develop other severe signs and symptoms, we give them supportive treatment. A number of drugs, however, have been shown globally to have effect on the virus, including hydroxychloroquine, that in Kenya should not be sold over the counter. Other drugs, of course, include medications that are normally used for respiratory tract infections. For instance, common drugs like azithromycin. And the other, of course, element of managing COVID-19 is in terms of isolation. It is also by protecting the caregiver and protecting the patient from other infections and from infecting other people. And in terms of where COVID-19 can be treated in this country, basically, for those that have mild to moderate symptoms of COVID-19, any hospital from a health center to level 5 should be able to give some kind of treatment or other, since anyone from a nurse, clinical officer, to all our doctors should and ought to, and I know they have, some form of orientation and knowledge to the management of COVID-19. However, in severe cases, and in cases where we have comorbidities, where we have other pre-existing conditions, for instance, diabetes, for instance, heart disease, for instance, chronic kidney failure, for instance, cancer, where we have such an underlying existing condition before COVID infection, then it becomes a little bit challenging and delicate to handle COVID-19. And therefore, those kind or that category of patients should be handled in well-equipped hospitals, especially level 5 hospitals, that have ICU facilities, and they are not very few. Every county has at least one such hospital, if not more. And in Nairobi, we have a little bit more than the other counties. For instance, we have Kenyatta National Hospital, we have Bagadi, we have Aga Khan with us, we have Nairobi Hospital with us, we have Nairobi West Hospital with us, we have Avenue Hospital with us, we have Nairobi Women's Hospital with us, we have Avenue Hospital with us, and the list keeps going on and on and on. In terms of home care, I would say this, that people who have mild or no symptoms at all and have facilities at home that can allow them to do self-isolation comfortably. For instance, they have a separate room that can be dedicated for home care for that particular person alone in isolation, and they have toilet facilities, or you know, toilet and bathroom facilities. It is possible those who are without symptom or those who have mild symptoms to isolate at home and be taken care of at home. What else does it entail? It entails protecting the person in isolation by assuring that they have, or they are taught how to do hand hygiene by washing their hands with soap and water as regularly as is appropriate, by wearing a mask at all times if they are infected, and especially if they are stepping out of the room, and ensuring that the room is well ventilated, ensuring that the items and objects and linen and cutlery and all other things that are being used by the person in isolation remain for that person's use alone. And if they must go out, then they have to be disinfected. By ensuring that the cutlery used by that person is used by that person alone, by ensuring that they change their masks and other PPEs that they may need as often as is necessary, and disposing them appropriately. Also, in terms of home care, a healthy diet comes in handy. A balanced diet is very important. Enough rest for the person in home care or in home isolation is very key, and physical exercise, especially aerobic exercises and muscle strengthening exercises. They don't have to go out. There is a lot one can do inside the room. And if they have to go out, then they would have to protect themselves and protect other people, and also ensure they do not entangle with the general populace, or they don't get to public places, they remain limited to the compound. There is also an addition to home care in terms of supplementing vitamins C, D, and zinc that have been shown to have effect on the immune system and on helping the mucous membranes to recover. Also, they are supposed to do a daily temperature check and chart their temperatures so that they'll be on lookout in case they develop a fever, which would be a sign that they ought to consult the doctor immediately. They are also supposed to report any symptoms that they may develop at home, including the signs that we mentioned earlier, like fever, like general unwellness, like muscle pains, like difficulty in breathing, etc., etc. And then if their condition is worsening, they ought to be taken to hospital or check themselves into a hospital nearby immediately. And after being in isolation for a period of 14 days, they ought to retest again so that they are able to know their position, whether they are now COVID-19 free or they still are positive and should remain in isolation. Generally, studies elsewhere have shown that after 14 days of isolation, and in fact, according to WHO, CDC, Ministry of Health guidelines, after 10 days to 14 days of isolation and 3 days without any symptoms, then even if one was COVID positive, there is almost zero probability or possibility of infecting other people. This is because the positivity of the test may remain a little longer than one can infect others. In terms of prevention, there are more than 140 vaccines now on trial around the world. But of interest is the study that is being conducted by AstraZeneca, or the trial that is being conducted by AstraZeneca in conjunction with Oxford University, that seeks also to involve several countries around the world. And I'm happy to report that the government, good government of our republic, is working in conjunction with that team to see if it's possible to get Kenyans vaccinated against COVID-19. South Africa is on board in these trials, which they joined a little earlier. But as far as the vaccine is concerned, since those of us who are involved in medicine and allied disciplines know that a vaccine takes a little bit of time to develop and to test. And when it comes to testing, time is required so that an increasing number of people can be put on trial, starting with as few as possible before going to the general population. And the safety of the vaccine has to be evaluated over time. And the efficacy of a vaccine has to be evaluated over time. Therefore, in other words, what I'm trying to bring in here is the aspect of time, that by the time we have a fully available, fully proven vaccine in terms of efficacy, in terms of safety in human beings, it may take us a little while longer. And therefore, in the meantime, in terms of prevention, I would want us to continue following the current Ministry of Health guidelines by observing hand hygiene, using soap and water to clean our hands as often as is necessary when we are eating, when we are preparing food, when we are handling raw food to cooked food, we clean our hands. When we go to the ladies and gentlemen or to the rooms, we clean our hands. When we handle possible contaminated services, we clean our hands. When we are going to our workplaces, we clean our hands. When we are coming out of our workplaces, we clean our hands, and we cannot clean our hands enough. An option to cleaning our hands would be in setups like hospitals and public offices. There can also be a possibility that in between washing our hands, we can use sanitizer. This is preferably alcohol-based sanitizers with about 70% alcohol or thereabouts that have been approved by the ministry. And sanitizers should not be used for too many times without rinsing off with water. For instance, at our workplace, the recommendation is simple. After every 5 times of using an alcohol-based sanitizer, wash your hands with water and soap, rinse off. And then in terms of respiratory hygiene, let us continue wearing masks. It does not
really matter so much in the public, whether the mask, cloth mask or surgical mask or the so-called N95 and others. The most important thing is that if I wear a mask, I am protecting other people. When other people are wearing masks, they are protecting me, so that you protect me, I protect you, and eventually we go a long way in protecting one another. When we are sneezing or coughing, if we are not wearing a mask, let us use tissue. We cough into tissue or we sneeze into tissue that we dispose of appropriately in a bin that has a cover. And if we don't have tissue, then we can cough into our flexed elbows or sneeze into our flexed elbows. But that will also mean that if we have the germ, it is left on our clothes that can also infect other people later. Let us ensure good ventilation when we are indoor, in our homes and offices and everywhere, where possible or as far as possible. Let us avoid crowded places like malls and churches and mosques as far as we can. Let's keep social distance. We avoid being too close to other people. We avoid being in too crowded places. But if we can maintain a distance of 1.5 meters apart between one person and the other, we are good to go. As far as possible, let us stay at home if we have no business moving around town and crowded places. And let's cut back on our travel to minimum necessary travel. Let us also try to identify people with signs and symptoms of COVID-19, the ones we mentioned, and refer them to appropriate facilities as may be necessary. I'll skip that slide on hand washing. I'll just mention passing that when we are washing our hands, I think this is important. Let us wash our hands thoroughly, the front and the back of the palm, and between the fingers, and at the tip of the fingers, we rub ourselves, we apply soap all over, like the surface where the glove holds the hand, for about 20 to 30 seconds, and then we rinse off for at least a minimum of 10 seconds in clean running water. So if we can wash our hands thoroughly for a minute or so, as often as we can, then we are reducing the risk of transmitting the COVID-19 virus from our hands. At high risk, there are several groups of people or categories of people that may be at high risk of getting COVID-19 infection. And this includes, like I say, diabetic people, people suffering from cancer, people suffering from chronic obstructive airway diseases, including asthma, people who are severely obese, people who have kidney disease, sickle cell disease, a weakened immunity from whatever reason, including HIV infection, people who are hypertensive. Those are at high risk of getting COVID-19 infection. In terms of where we are globally, we have 30 million people infected. Fortunately, more than 21 million people have already recovered. We have close to 1 million deaths, not so small. And currently we have slightly over 7 million people in active infection around the world. And in terms of where we are in Kenya, we have slightly over 36,000 people who have had infection with COVID-19. Over 23,000 have recovered, over 600 people died, have died of COVID-19, and currently over 12,000 people are infected with COVID-19. As I wind up, the pandemic has had economic and social effects globally. The pandemic has affected industry and therefore disrupted or reduced production. The pandemic has affected the way we do business, has affected commerce. The pandemic has disrupted travel because of travel bans and other limitations, like the number of people who ought to travel in buses and matatus and planes and all manner of modes of transport. The COVID-19 has severely affected the hospitality industry, including the bars and the hotels. The COVID-19 pandemic has affected tourism, and we know this in Kenya better than many other places. COVID-19 has affected the education sector with the schools closing, and a year wasted, close to a year is gone. COVID-19 has affected the health sector severely with overwhelming health burden. COVID-19 has affected the agricultural sector variously. COVID-19 has affected import and export. In terms of mental health, which is not just merely absence of mental disease, but also it is about our psychological welfare. COVID-19 brought to us fear of infection and death. COVID-19 has affected family members, if not infected some, and our friends and our workmates and our neighbors. COVID-19 has resulted to loss of employment to millions of people around the world. COVID-19 has resulted to salary cuts, job insecurity, confusion, loss of business, inability or disrupted travel, being at home or working from home and working on rotation and forced leaves and having to wear masks, having to wash hands all the time, things that we were not used to, having to keep distance. Remember, Africans and Kenyans, we are very social people. We have had to change the way we greet each other, the way we like or appreciate one another with hugs and all those kind of things. COVID-19 has sent our children home, and this is affecting us with no certainty when our children are going back to school. COVID-19 has even affected our places of worship and even affected the bars, with bans on bars and alcohol sale, et cetera. And this is resulting to denial and fear and isolation and stigma and hopelessness and helplessness and anger and hurt and stress. And even to some extent, some people becoming depressed and some contemplating suicide. COVID-19 has affected our mental health. And how would we know that we are sliding into stress, or stress is catching up with us, or we are developing signs of depression? Number one, change in our eating habits and sleeping habits, loss of interest in work and other activities that we do on a daily basis. Mood swings from being irritable to aggressiveness to anger, worry, and fear. Memory lapses or forgetfulness. Feeling tired or having low energy all the time. Not feeling like doing the things that we do. Persistent unexplained headaches, chest pains, numbness, back pains or mid-shoulder pains. Withdrawing from others or isolating ourselves, inability to concentrate, tendency to doing drugs, and especially alcohol, which is on the increase, and other such signs and symptoms. And this, now again, stress would cause us health problems, including ulcers. Stress can cause us high blood pressure. Stress can cause us or aggravate diabetes or cause us uncontrolled blood sugars. Stress can cause us heart disease. Stress can affect our reproductive capacity or ability. Stress has very close relationship with accidents in the workplaces. Stress has also a very close relationship with increasing domestic violence and child abuse, etc., etc. We need to recognize when we are stressed. And we need to develop coping skills for stress. And one way of coping with stress is avoiding what stresses us. Sometimes it's just a question of saying no to things that we don't want. At times, what it takes is to alter or change things that we can be able to change. But oftentimes, things that stress us, we cannot be able to change them. So what do? We adapt to them. We become flexible and adapt to them and learn to live with them and accept them as facts of life or realities. By now I know most of us have accepted COVID-19 is here. COVID-19 is a reality. We have to live with it. We have to wear masks. At first it was stress. Now to most of us, it's no longer so much stressful. At first, the fear levels were very high. They were tangible. Panic levels are down. In fact, some people now have let their guard down. I have overheard some people say that COVID-19 is gone. Not as yet. Eating well will help. Taking a break or a rest does help a long way in dealing with stress. Engaging in physical exercise sends or makes us to produce endorphins, some hormones or feel-good hormones in our bodies. And being prepared all the time for the worst, but planning for the best does help us in case of any eventualities. Spending on budget as opposed to impulse, cutting back on budget when the times are hard, giving priority to needs as opposed to wants will help us to deal with stress. And then we can do deep breathing exercises. We can spend time with our friends and family, including our children. We can deal with negative thoughts. We can listen to music that we like. We can engage in yoga and avoiding drugs, which are a vicious cycle, helps us to deal with stress. We can also talk to people we can confide in, people we know that we will share with and they will not take it to BBC for broadcast. And eventually, if none of the above home tips do not work, we need to seek professional help from a counselor or a doctor or perhaps a social worker on the way to go. How about stigma as we finish together? There has been a lot of stigma surrounding COVID-19. How can we deal with it? The best way to deal with stigma is by giving or countering myths with facts. When we give facts and facts and facts that will dissolve myths, then of course, from the experience we had with HIV, we know it works. We know that when we do not know something, we tend to have a lot of stigma around it. But the more we know it, the more now that we know, people can get COVID-19 and recover and live normal lives or go back to normal lives, the more we reduce stigma. We can reduce stigma by showing empathy, putting ourselves in the shoes of the affected. We can reduce stigma by having more understanding of the disease, like sharing the way we are doing now, correcting negative language, stigmatizing language, like referring to victims of COVID-19, such language, which is stigmatizing, and speaking out against negative behaviors and languages. When we see people behaving in a manner that is likely to stigmatize others, we correct that immediately. And of course, by joining support groups ourselves, and by encouraging and directing people who are infected and people who are recovering to join support groups of people who are sharing common challenges, then we reduce stigma because they know they are not alone. Ladies and gentlemen, with that bit, I beg to put a stop so that we can see if there are a few questions regarding COVID-19 and where we are coming from and the way to go. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. I want to give you a clap. Let me ask everybody to give a round of applause through the reaction icon there. Thank you so much for that very detailed session that you have given us. There are a few questions. So I think if anyone else has a question, I think we have six so far on the chat. If anyone else has a question, please feel free to put it in there. But so far, Dr. I think the first question is about hydroxychloroquine and whether it is effective or not. Has it been successfully used in Kenya? That's the question.
Thank you very much. That's a very good question. There are doctors that are using hydroxychloroquine, but at the official level, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, can you hear me? Yes, thank you. There are doctors that, and especially in the private sector, that are using hydroxychloroquine, but at the official Minister of Health level, hydroxychloroquine is not officially approved for treatment of COVID-19. But elsewhere, I want to cite confidently that elsewhere in America and a few other countries, hydroxychloroquine has been used effectively in the treatment of COVID-19. Of course, it is not an antiviral drug. It is used in conjunction with some antivirus drugs and also supportive therapy. Therefore, I want to confidently say this, that no one single drug is a cure for COVID-19. No one single drug is a cure for COVID-19. Can we move on to the other question, please?
Yes. I hope Althea, that question is well answered for you. If not, you can still raise it.
Yes, no, thank you very much, Doctor. It certainly was. Thank you.
Thank you. So the second question was on the use on home care and the use of PPEs. So the question is, do we need to use, when we have a sick person in the home, do we have to use the same kind of PPEs we see the medical personnel using?
Thank you. Thank you very much. It very much depends on the doctor's prescription. If I had a patient, for instance, on home care, because every patient on home care ought to have or to be linked to the doctor who sent them for testing and therefore gave a prescription for home care, it is the doctor or the medical worker who is supposed to assess the virulence, the infamous of that person, and therefore give a guideline on what appropriate PPEs to use and what not to use. So generally, the best place to begin is with the doctor. Your doctor, the doctor for your patient, the doctor for the infected person will give a plan for home care. And nobody should be under home care without guidance and supervision in an ideal situation. But at the bare minimum, we should observe hand hygiene, keep ourselves clean, decontaminate the room as far as we can, decontaminate everything that is handled by that person as often as possible, and limit the transfer of the things that are being used by that person to other people. In other words, we dedicate that room for 14 days also. We dedicate that room and the linen and the cutlery and everything to that person, including, if it were possible, the toilet or lavatory. And that is where the challenge for home care comes in, because not everyone is in an environment that is conducive for home care. You cannot be in a semi-slum where it is so congested, where they share public toilet facilities, where they share public bathrooms, where they share every other thing, and you qualify for home care. But having said so, it is not hard to improvise. As long as we observe the basics, hand hygiene, respiratory hygiene, by wearing a mask when you walk into the room and having the patient wear a mask when they are in the room and somebody is going into the room, and limiting the care to one person. And that one person ought to have clear, very clear instructions on what to do and what not to do, so that the other members of the family are isolated from the infected person. That limits the rate of transmission from that one member to the rest of the members. Am I getting anywhere in terms of the answer?
Yes, probably certainly you are. Yes, you are. If anybody has still area of clarification, they can raise their hand or chat. The third question is on supplements. You mentioned we can take some supplements, vitamin C, D, zinc. And then the question is there any danger in taking too much? What is the limit?
Because yes. Thank you very much. That's a very good question, because now everybody is on board vitamin C, zinc, and D from right, left, and center. In an ideal situation, we ought to take all medications, including supplements, under doctor's prescriptions. And therefore, in the initial period, those supplements ought to be taken for a limited period. Why? We get vitamin C from the food we eat. We are only supplementing because of preventing COVID infection or during the period of COVID infection. We get vitamin D, we process it from the sun. Our skin processes it from exposure to the sun. We are only supplementing it. We get zinc from food sources. We are only supplementing. An excess of any vitamin, including vitamin A, B, C, up to K, any vitamin has negative side effects. So my answer is straight and short. Let your doctor prescribe the relevant supplements for you. In any case, for instance, the normal zinc tablet may contain only 20 milligrams only, but you may now have to use a zinc tablet that has three times higher that dose. The normal vitamin D supplement may contain less in terms of international units, but now the one that we have been using commonly during this COVID season is reinforced, is so strong, is about 60,000 international units. For instance, I'm just giving an example that we may not need to take these supplements forever because there is a danger. What we need to do is go by the doctor's prescription. In my case, I will advise you take for 14 days, go back to your doctor as you retest.
Yeah, thank you very much, Daktari. I think I'll allow you to just answer one more question and then you can respond to the rest on the chat as we go on with other sessions. So this is the last one I'll ask you directly. The rest that will come up, please kindly, I beg you to respond on the chat. Daktari, we see the numbers going down, which is a good thing. My worry is we have seen so many people have dropped wearing of masks and public water points vandalized. What effect will this do in case we face a second wave of COVID?
Thank you very much. Another good question, though a little bit controversial. When we say the numbers are going down, it's common sense or common knowledge to us that it depends on what numbers we are talking about. If we are testing 1,000 people today and 2,000 tomorrow, if the proportion was 10% prevalence or 10% of the sample tested, your guess is as good as mine that the bigger the sample tested, the possibly the higher the number of positives, if not negatives. That is number one. And it is food for thought that if we are not testing more people, then of course, we don't expect more positive results. However, on a positive note, the numbers are going down. Indeed they are, but there is a risk. Reports from elsewhere, including Europe, including Spain, including Italy, including India, including the rest of countries like Canada and US, they have what now is appearing to be, including China, sorry, they have what now is appearing like a second wave of COVID-19. And this is now the real, real danger. We must be able to tell ourselves and tell fellow Kenyans, including our families and our neighbors, that the danger is still looming large. It is not yet time to drop the guard. We cannot stop the guidelines that are in place. We cannot stop the practices that we have learned from COVID-19, we cannot go back to our old behaviors for the same reason that the virus is still available to us. Anything can happen. And then we see the numbers surging. That's my fear, that all of a sudden, if we stop washing our hands, we stop wearing masks, we stop social distance, go back to our old ways, there is a possibility we could get another wave of COVID-19, God forbid.
Wow, thank you so much, Daktari. So such an informative session. Let us all give him a round of applause through the reaction button there. Yes, so Daktari, kindly proceed to responding to other questions on the chat.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So I want to introduce invite our second speaker, who is Martin Wamalwa from Resolution Health. Karibu sana, Martin. And please, I'll encourage us also to continue using the chat to ask Martin any questions as he proceeds.
Thank you and good afternoon, team. First, my appreciation to the Daktari. That was a very informative session. I really appreciate. So we would like to look at the cover section of the discussion. And in the cover section, I think I have a few highlights to point out. In as far as coverage is concerned, both in private insurance industry and the National Hospital Insurance Fund, NHIF. So I think we all recall that in March this year, when the pandemic was finally declared in Kenya, of course, from elsewhere, the clinicians, including Dr. Mburu and those of us in insurance, were sort of in a non-comfortable zone, some actually in a panic. Reason being that this is a new disease we don't quite know well. At that point, of course, in terms of approach and management and treatment, nobody had a clear direction in that regard. And we couldn't even quantify the risk of what we would insure if we were to cover COVID-19. So at that point in time, we go into consultation. Of course, insurance industry, together with our regulator, the insurance regulatory authority, to say, what can we do for our clients? Of course, by default, that being a pandemic, most of the insurance industry would not be covered. And as such, of course, we have to now tell our clients that, yes, this is unfortunately not covered. But all said and done, we have then to come and say, what can we do under the circumstances, given that everybody was off guard or was received off guard in as far as this is concerned. So in the subsequent months, I think May and June thereabout, so independent insurance companies came up with a few approaches in as far as guidance is concerned and treatment is concerned. But remember from that point and even to today, that unlike many other conditions, COVID-19 is largely under the direction and management of the Ministry of Health. And that is why even today, all those who think they have COVID or those who have confirmed to have COVID have to report to the ministry either through the facilities they have been admitted to or visited or through direct contact to the ministry. So we all again wait for further direction and management from the ministry because it's not a private matter, it's still a government plan or progress as it were. So as I said, in terms of the progress, then we come up and most insurance companies set aside a designated limit within which would cover especially those who have been admitted for management of COVID-19. Remember, on outpatient basis, we have the approach of mass testing being overseen or headed by the Ministry of Health. So they would identify places to go and do mass testing. They would come up with the numbers that they report, and then they would announce to all of us. So inpatient was the tricky probably thing. And in addition, remember, in terms of cost, you expect large costs to come from inpatient admissions. So designated limits are available, especially on inpatient basis. For instance, ours is up to 250,000 shillings across board, but this is within the limit that one has purchased. Now, second to that is that in terms of service providers, so where Dr. Mburu is coming from and the rest of the facilities, again, for a facility to manage and test COVID, you need permission from the same ministry, because again, today, if you are going in for management of COVID, it can be done in every facility, whether private or government. So there are selected and designated facilities which will handle COVID and of course do the reporting, and they are well equipped to do that. So it also means that when you either go for testing or management, then you will need to go to those designated facilities, and then we come in to pay that amount of money that I've just mentioned. However, Dr. I think has mentioned that most of us likely may not necessarily land in health facility per se, even when we have COVID infection. The element of home care now comes in to say, for those of us with either mild or no symptoms at all, what do we do? And I think we have had an elaborative approach in terms of healthcare, I mean, home management. So we also advocate for home management for those with mild and no symptoms. And indeed we have enhanced that to say, we have now designated and come up with assistance from doctors like Mburu, who are actually available for follow-up, some bit of counseling, share information with the people who are on home care. So while on home care, we get in touch with you, we connect you to that particular doctor, but we also follow up to see how you are progressing. And of course, keeping an eye just in case things turn worsen and you need to go to hospital, so we can be able to facilitate that, of course, in the safe environment. Having said that, I know there's a lot of, again, awareness, so that sessions like this, I'm glad we have organized. We are for pro-information. And I think in terms of that, we also facilitate and enhance awareness by, of course, engaging the doctors like Dr. Mburu, so that they come and share with us what we need to know, what we need to do, what we need not to do, and maybe give us hope that yes, there is a vaccine, and that indeed, if you're well prepared, you can safely go through COVID-19, and then you'll be a good example to the rest of us and give hope to the rest of the people. I also know that we were to ask about NHIF coverage. Remember, NHIF, together with private insurance, work like co-insurance. In other words, they collaborate. So mostly you'll find that in every admission, there's a portion that is paid by the private insurance, there's a portion that is paid by the NHIF. So similarly in COVID, that approach still stands. But what I do know is that in government-run institutions, first, the government would care for the most of the bill. And two, if you have NHIF, then it would come in handy to cater for most of the bills. However, what I do realize, although not formal, they say that if you are covered by private insurance, NHIF tends to give you lesser benefit because they know you have a second option in that regard. But what we need to understand is that, yes, it's a co-insurance, so they complement what private insurance is doing, or private insurance complements what NHIF is doing, as vice versa. Then there is, I think, the contact bit to say, or first, how can we keep in check or costs in check? So if I suspect or I think I have COVID or have been confirmed to have COVID, how do I make sure that I keep the cost in control? So two things. One, that the government facilities seem to be more affordable than the private ones by virtue of them being government. But I know there is also the issue of pressure from the many populations. You might have limitations accessing the same service from the government facilities, in which case then yes, you need to go through the private ones. But I think the second most important thing is that we cannot admit everyone who is COVID, who has had an infection with COVID. Those of us with mild or no symptoms, then home care comes in handy. So if you must not be admitted, then please make an arrangement so that you have self-isolation at home. And as I mentioned, we have the support service that comes to your aid, and then we keep in touch, you tell us on the progress, and we are able to support you in that so that you are not only safe, but you're also keeping, you know, an eye on what is developing. And of course, we'll be available to process or facilitate an admission if and when you need it. Then there's the question to say contact. So today, if I want to get into service for COVID management, what do I do? Now, two things. On the covers, on the cards that we issue to any client, whether for COVID or many other conditions, we put there an emergency number. That emergency number functions 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In other words, it's around the clock. So we have people manning it both the day and even in the night. So you can actually call that number. But when you call that number for COVID management, then two things would happen. So we find a facility nearest to you for management, but we also facilitate notification to the government. Remember, we said that in COVID infection, the government needs to be notified. So it means we also need to notify the government. Now, you also are allowed to directly call the Ministry of Health. I'm sure you have heard of dialing 719 or messaging *719#. So by that, you'll be getting in touch with the ministry directly. And when you get with the ministry directly, of course, someone picks up your notification and gets back to you and then interrogates you of the circumstances of what that has happened. But that is meant to determine whether you meet the threshold, one, for undergoing a COVID-19 test, and two, for either isolation at home or you need isolation and management from the hospital setting. So every other person is different, but the approach is more or less the same. Whether at a private facility or government facility or reporting to us, we'll all report to the central place within the Ministry of Health so that you are recorded, and then we follow up from that kind. I think the second thing which Dr. Mburu had mentioned is that once you have been in isolation for those 14 days, I see most facilities not seeing the need to retest again because they'll be under the impression that you are good and well to go. So they'll discharge you home, and then you can probably pick up the things you need to pick up. But of importance, I think what we all need to still understand is that today we treat almost each and every other person as a positive COVID-19 patient in terms of protection and protocols. So the cough etiquette, the sanitization bit, and keeping the distance is meant to protect ourselves and also protect those that we are interacting with. So I think with that, then if you have done the prevention effectively, first then the numbers will come down and will be safe from the infection. Of course, the other things where we say now keeping the body clean in terms of balanced diet, hygiene, and the rest of the protocols will still come in. But in a nutshell, yes, I think I have addressed what was key in this, unless someone wants to address a specific item.
Wow, thank you so much, Martin. Let us appreciate Martin for handling that session so well. I think I can see one question for you, and then we'll go to the next speaker. If anyone else has a question, they can put it on the chat, and I'll advise you, I'll ask you, Martin, very kindly to respond to any of those queries on the chat. So I'll say, can you tell us about any ambulance services linked to the calls?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
True. So ambulance service, initially before COVID, it was designated for emergency transfers, either from the home environment to the nearest health facility or from one health facility to a more advanced health facility. So in COVID-19, ambulance service is still available. The only thing now here is that the ambulance essentially will be taking the person to the nearest testing center, so to speak, or the facility where they'll be admitted and managed for COVID. So it's covered, but kindly note that it will be covered within and up to the Kenya shillings, 250,000 shillings that we have mentioned that is designated to COVID-19. And please note now that I have the opportunity, of course, the whole of insurance industry is now saying upon renewal, we now have discussions to say, can we then set up a well-designed designated limit for COVID-19? Of course, in consultation with you, the client, so that we have a better understanding and maybe we expect better innovations in the near future. And most likely you'll see better products in as far as COVID-19 cover is concerned.
Thank you so much, Martin, for those clarifications, for taking time to really answer our questions and give us all that information. I now want to invite our final speaker, that is Collins Athe. Thank you, Collins, so much for taking your time to be here. Kindly go ahead. We want to listen to you.
Okay, thanks, Susan. As Susan has mentioned, my name is Collins Athe. I work for Dahlberg Research. Now, I did not have a personal encounter with COVID, as in I was not the sick person, but my daughter was. We were working on this day, and then I see a message from my wife telling me that I should call her urgently. Then I realized that she had tried getting through to me on phone severally, but my phone was on silent, so I had not noticed. Then when I call her, she tells me that our daughter is sick, and she thinks it's the symptoms of the symptoms suggest that it is COVID. And then she goes ahead and tells me that we should, however, observe her for a few days before we really take a step. Then quickly in my mind, I think she works in a hospital, deals with COVID patients, and she thinks it's COVID, but then telling me to observe. I quickly thought that she was in denial, and I told her, no, we have to get her tested immediately. So she then said it's okay, and she was reporting to work, but she went with her. Then the test was done, and later in the evening now, as I was leaving work, I went, picked her, and then we went home. As we were leaving, she asked her colleague if the tests were, the results were out, and the colleague told her no, but before she gets home, they'll get in touch with her. So we were driving in the jam, and the traffic was quite heavy. So we reached home just before 9, that was curfew time. And then I asked her, these people have not gotten back to you. And she calls and they tell her the batch has not been run, but they will give her the results in a few minutes. About half an hour later, it's not done, and she calls another colleague and is also evasive, and then I tell her, these people are managing you. So we have to get back to the hospital and get these results. I was insisting because we needed to know how to handle the child if it was positive. So we drove back to the hospital with the child, and her youngest sister had also had some fever previous day. And since they're very close, we thought that she might also be, if the older girl has it, then she might also be having it. So we wanted her tested. She had not been tested. When we got to the hospital, we went to see the doctor, and the doctor said the results were not posted, and then they couldn't help. So what my wife did, she was open with the doctor and told her she works in the same place, and she could quickly run to the lab and have the results posted. So then the doctor tells her that they've just been posted and your child has COVID. It was not easy. Yeah, this was now around 11 o'clock in the night. Then we asked, should the small kid be tested too? And they said, no, whatever regime of treatment they put her sister on, then it will be also for the young girl. So we asked, now, do we also isolate the young girl? And they said it's not necessary. So it was quite confusing. But then they gave us the protocol to use for home isolation. And we drove back home and put in place whatever we had been advised to do. But then the following day, we started getting calls from all over the ministry. And it was a lot of calls. They wanted details. They wanted us to help trace the contacts. And then it was necessary for everybody in the family to be tested. So again, now we had to go back and everybody had to be tested. The first question we asked was if they could help us get the testing in a public facility, because the private facility was charging 11,800 per person, which was way, way above. Unfortunately, they could not help. That's the time that the kits were not in good supply. Somebody told us that we could get it done for 200 shillings at the Kenyatta University facility. The problem was you needed to be referred, and we were not getting any referral that could work for us. So we had to take the test. When we took the test, everybody was negative, including the small girl. So we then talked to the daughter who was positive, and she helped to trace people that she had been in touch with in the past 14 days. And for all that were traced and tested, none of them was positive. Now, 3 days after testing, she became very, very ill in the house. And one of the promises we had been given, actually it was not a promise, it was an instruction that if we have to move her, then we were given a number to call, and they would give us, they would send an ambulance to facilitate the movement. Now we called that number and we were not helped at all. So again, we had to organize privately to get her to hospital. And she was admitted for 2 nights. After the admission, she was she stabilized, and we were again allowed to take her back home for isolation. Now, after 14 days, somewhere along, we even thought that she was not COVID positive, but now, interestingly, she was tested in the whole process. She was tested 3 times, because when she the first test, and then when she was getting admitted, she was tested, After 14 days, she was tested and all those turned out positive. After the 21st day is when she was tested and now she was negative. Now, to finish, all I can say that it was quite a very trying time for the family. It was not easy for us because it was very uncertain. You don't know if your child has underlying conditions that the doctor was talking about that you don't know about, and therefore the disease might well not be mild. And apart from the mental torture, the economic stress was also not easy. The financial strain on the family was immense, because we also had to be tested twice. And all that were in the private hospital. And imagine for the 2 days that she was admitted, we had to spend more than 100,000. So had it been a prolonged stay in hospital, it might not have been manageable. All I can say now is, as colleagues, as people in the same industry, let's be careful not to let our guards down. One of my cousins who had the disease and who came to support told us one thing, and I still remember it, that the disease is very mischievous. The moment you think that it is gone, that's when it's regrouping. So let's not let our guards down. Let's continue taking into effect the protocols that have been set so that we can defeat this disease once and for all. I would take this opportunity also to thank my directors. They were very supportive. When I called them, they were so touched and they were very willing to assist. That assurance that you can call on us in case of anything was very, very strengthening at that moment. Thanks.
Wow, thank you, Collins, for sharing your experience so well. I know, you know, you've really taken us through the whole journey that you went through together with your family, and it's a learning for us. I think it's very educative. Yeah, so thank you so much. Let us applaud Collins for really being brave and really taking us through that and breaking the stigma, because when you talk about it, then people no longer shy off. So thank you for being part of that movement that breaks the stigma. And I hope we take your words seriously, that when we think this virus is gone, it's time for it to regroup. It behaves mischievously. Those words have stuck in my head. So you have taught me something very useful today. Thank you so much. I see there are I don't know. I think there's a question there. Most of them are appreciations to you, Collins, but there's a question that about the NHIF cover. Were you able to use it during the treatment, the management for your daughter?
Yeah, they paid for the bed.
Okay, just the bed.
Yeah, just the bed when she was admitted.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much. I don't see any other questions. So what I want to do, because now we are just 5 minutes past time when we were supposed to close this webinar, I want to hand over to my colleague, Althea, to close off. Thank you. And thank you for listening to us.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much to all of you, Dr. Mburu, Martin Mwamalwa and Colin Zathe, for sharing. This has really been an insightful and a very, very interesting webinar. And I know I have attended a few of them, but I think all three speakers spoke to us very clearly and very directly and very relevantly to all of us. So thank you so much. this whole experience has been a global disruption. It's been an industry disruption. And of course, we are all very much impacted on it. So these sessions are extremely important and extremely informative. I just wanted to very quickly mention some of the areas, the key areas that some of the that the speakers spoke about. So of particular interest for me, when I look at the Zoom sessions, and Dr. Buru had talked about the transmission, what I realized with the Zoom sessions is that how much we touch our faces and how much we touch our, the surfaces and the likes. So to be bringing that very raising that is very important for us to truly understand. And as you can see, I'm already touching my face. The other side was the home care and home care instructions. These were very comprehensive and very important for us, because the majority of us are going to have to be homed cared for should it happen to us. So to know what we need to do is extremely important. So thank you for that, and the preventative measures and all of that. And finally, he ended on the stress and the stigma. And again, these are very, very important things. Understanding the stress in particular is really important. And looking out for when somebody is stressed, the signs that we need to look for. These are things, again, that we don't necessarily think about. So thank you, Dr. Buru, for raising these. And I hope with what he has spoke about in the terms of the stigma, that none of us, you know, on this webinar are likely to be either affected by the stigma or being the advocates of the stigma. So thank you very much for all of that, Dr. Buru. We really learned from you. So then we went on to Martin from Resolution Health. Thank you very much for the clarifications in terms of the designated facilities, as well as how the insurance companies have been able to assist, and for the quick thinking in terms of going in and saying, okay, the policy, your health policies were not previously covered, but this is what we can do. We really appreciate that, and the fact that the insurance companies, we hope more than Resolution Health, are actually supporting its clients in that way. And of course, the NHIF, the clarifications on that. Again, we've heard a lot in terms about what NHIF is able to offer and has been offering. And Collins, of course, also has explained what they were able to offer. So thank you very much, Martin, and your team in terms of that. And then finally, we ended with Collins. I don't know about the rest of you, but certainly Collins, I believe for me, yours was the most impactful, because you were talking about a real life story and you were talking how it impacted you. And I think we all felt for you, and we all felt, you know, if we may have the misfortune of being in your situation, we hope that one, we will deal with it similarly as to how you dealt with it. And by that, I mean that quick action. You were being told that perhaps come back and the likes, but you and your wife pushed through to make sure that you got the results, so you knew what to do. So thank you very much for sharing in that. It was a real challenge, and we really felt for you. But by you sharing with us the real challenges that you went through, we hope that we ourselves will be more prepared should it happen to us. And I think as well, you really emphasized to us the importance of going and getting that test. Rather than hanging around and waiting, it's so important for everyone, if they have the symptoms, to quickly go out and get the test. So all of that, all of the three sessions have been very, very helpful, very useful. I know for me, and I hope for all of us on this webinar, have actually learned a lot. So we really sincerely thank you for your time. As Paul Koskay, the chairperson of MSRA, and Susan Chege, the chair or the lead of the committee, had mentioned, we have looked to try and pull this thing together so that the people in our industry and MSRA members can be more informed and more enlightened. And certainly this session has done all of that. So thank you to Paul, our chair. Thank you to Susan. And thank you to our COVID committee. But most of all, thank you very much for our speakers. We truly appreciate and we've truly learned. So with that, I'll hand you back over to either Susan or Sylvia. But thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Althea, for wrapping that up so well. I think we just want to officially now close the webinar. And we want to thank you again for attending and making time to be here. Thank you. And I hope we meet during another webinar.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, people.
Thank you so much.
Thanks and bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.